Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Elshai. Very happy to be joining you and always love to talk golf, especially in December.
Yeah, so we're recording this episode here in beautiful Western New York, and there's snow on the ground.
So yeah, I had the salt out today.
Yeah, so I thought it was a really good time to take a look back at what a great summer we had, and what we're specifically going to talk about is what a great economic impact that golf has made this past summer. And really excited, we have got two guests joining us here on Skin in the Game. Gina Rizzi, the president of Radius Sports Group, and Tom Kaplan, who is the president of the New York State Turf Grass Association, as well as the director of golf and grounds at Huntington Country Club. They actually just published a study that spoke on what golf does for New York State as far as economic return, as far as jobs, tourism, et cetera, and really the importance of golf to New York State.
John, we see so many economic impact studies over the years on golf. Well, not too many on golf, actually. We're going to come back to
right,
that. But over the years,
this is the first
on
one they've done in a
decade. Yeah, on New York State. Since,
yeah.
Yeah, yes, it's what, 2007? Yeah, I think we're going to find out, right? But you see economic impact studies on stadiums, on sports teams. You see these. And one, it's always good to dig into the details. Like, that's great. You're making impact.
Well, before you go too far, the reason you see those studies from things like stadiums is there's so much public money going into them.
Yes.
So they need to rationalize that tax investment.
Right.
This is a little different because, we're talking private clubs, we're talking public clubs, many, many of which are even mom and pops without taxpayer incentives.
I think I got you going
there. You got me going.
I didn't even, sometimes I want to do that and it doesn't always work. This time, no, I was going where you were.
Yeah.
There's a reason you don't see them on golf too much. Hey, golf's a really popular sport.
Yeah.
So on the surface, and that's why it was when I first saw they did the study, I thought that's great. I wonder what their motivation is because there's so many people. I'm sitting next to one right now, you, John, who love golf. What is it that they need to, to prove or demonstrate? I'm sure there are things, but I'm curious, what is it? So this conversation's a fascinating one because, it turns out while golf's numbers are way up and they're doing great, they want, and this is what we're going to hear, a seat at the table with elected officials, with policymakers who are proposing and in some cases making policies or sending them up the legislative chain that they feel are not going to help those numbers continue.
Right. And before we get to Gina and Tom, there's just a couple of points that I want to make that really reinforce the importance of golf in New York State. First of all, 833 golf courses. I believe we have the fourth most golf courses of any state.
Right.
So that's a big number. And the other number is, there's close to 90,000 people employed in the game or the recreational activity of golf in the state. That's a lot of jobs. So we're talking jobs, we're talking tourism, we're talking, tax returns back into our communities. So it's a big deal. And I think hopefully at the end of this conversation, when people drive by a golf course, they see more than just grass and tee boxes.
And either a sport they love or a sport they wish they knew how to play.
But the important thing is whether you're a golfer or not, what golf does in this state has some type of ROI back to everyone, all right? Back to our whole premise of skin in the game, right? Everybody's got skin in the game. In this case, whether you're a player or not, there's an impact back to the communities.
Yeah. And it's, they want a seat at the table with elected officials. And so a question that I'm going to have for them is, knowing how popular golf is, including with politicians who either play it, have, as you'll point out, constituents who play it or run fundraisers at these clubs, it wouldn't seem like a hard sell or even a necessary sell, but there is. There's a lot beneath that. So
yeah, so stay tuned for our conversation with Gina Rizzi and Tom Kaplan on a study they just released on the economic impact of golf. But before that, you know, I just wanted to touch on a couple of news items. And then one I just wanted to bring up was the launch of a new season of the Women's Professional Hockey League. We've had Amy Scheer, their head of business operations, on the show in the past. We've had a
Katie Knoll.
We've had a professional women's hockey player on the show. So I just wanted to kind of bring people up to speed. The Seattle Torrents launched at Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle. They actually put 16,000 fans into the building for opening night.
Excellent.
Yeah.
This is a league that generally expects to draw about half of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. They're really built for buildings between 8,000 and 10,000.
Right.
The league took a little bit of a chance playing in an NHL arena, and happy to report they broke the record of attendance at that game, over 16,000. Everything I heard, everything I saw, the entertainment value was through the roof. So great for the WPHL. The WPHL is going to hit the road again this year, and they're looking at Chicago, Detroit, Denver, Dallas, and you'll love this, Tim, Hamilton, Ontario.
Oh, good.
To play some out-of-market games.
I hear there's a good arena in Hamilton,
you know,
Ontario.
And we did tee that up on our show a few weeks back, and I encourage our listeners to take a listen to the program where we spoke about the Hamilton Arena, which is TD Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like they're going to, those markets, Hamilton, Dallas, Denver, Chicago, Detroit, are going to get a taste of women's professional game, and hopefully, with good turnouts, that, you know, some of those markets will have expansion.
Yeah, I mean, there's real opportunity for this. I'm glad they picked those markets too. I mean, those are great hockey markets. Not that I need to tell you that, John, but the Women's Professional Hockey League's growth already, I mean, a couple of years in, the trajectory's been impressive. 16,000 people at the opening game for Seattle. Outstanding. They're in a couple of other NHL arenas as well, right? In New Jersey and in Minnesota. In Minnesota, mm-hmm. right, where mm-hmm. Katie Knoll, mm-hmm. our guest a few months ago, where she plays. If they can start filling, you know, out all of these arenas, and not that you don't have to sell out every game, but just draw, you know, five figures, right?
Yeah.
And fans from arena to arena, which I think they can do. And they have really strong marketing in place to do this as well. So yeah, it's just a matter of not even slow growth, but consistent.
Yeah,
consistent growth.
I really think
they're going to do well.
I really think they're doing it the right way. Slow, organic growth. You know, don't get over leveraged. Build the sport, because again, this is a league. I should say the women's game has started, stopped. You know, with other incarnations of leagues,
right.
But the WPHL, I really think, is doing it right. They've got the right markets, and you know, looking forward to seeing how their breakaway series goes in a number of those new beta markets.
Well, that's why they put this league together, right? Because there were multiple leagues out there, and you know, I'm simplifying the story a bit, but they came together, essentially formed one league. Do it once, do it right,
right?
Do it really well.
So yeah, you know, very exciting for the Women's Professional Hockey League, and look forward to having all of our listeners follow that league and the continued growth of that sport. But now let's segue to a summer sport, and let's bring on our guests Gina Rizzi and Tom Kaplan from the New York State Golf Association, as well as Radius Sports Group, to talk about the economic impact of golf in New York State. Stay tuned.
Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media The Bridge wherever you are. Search for the BTPM Listen app on all your devices.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game, and thrilled to introduce our two guests from the golf world. We have Gina Rizzi, the president of Radius Sports Group, and Tom Kaplan, who is the president of the New York State Turf Grass Association, as well as the director of golf and grounds at Huntington Country Club. Hey, Gina, Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
You know, Gina, you're on the West Coast a little bit in Nevada. Tom, obviously, you're here in New York State. How did the New York State Golf Association, as well as Radius Sports Group, how did you guys connect?
Well, I had been working in government affairs now for over 10 years. First starting out as a major at Cornell, you know, plant science. I was really asked to learn to trust the science and to follow the science. So that was something that I took with me when I became a golf course superintendent. Even as an assistant, you know, I had a desire to really learn the science and the art of managing golf courses. When I became a superintendent and got a little established with my career, I started to see some legislation that was coming out that was doing a pretty big injustice to the turf industry, specifically golf courses. And so I, you know, decided to put my education to good use and start to figure out how I could enlighten the politicians and the public in terms of what the narrative was that was being created. And of course, that's always difficult because the narrative is usually one-sided, and that comes from whoever creates the largest amount of noise financially. That is definitely, you know, what has taken place with a lot of this legislation that's come out. In New York State, we operate as an entity of the turf and ornamental landscape. The toughest part for golf courses is that we are lumped into a category that is really, as this economic and environmental impact report shows, you know, we are a huge commodity, but we're lumped in with homeowners, landscapers, and there's no disrespect to that, but, you know, we're a major sports revenue driver, and we have legislation coming at us that is tied into, you know, your everyday homeowners. So really, as my career progressed on the golf course, so did my career, you know, kind of in advocating for really what's right for golf in New York State. And, you know, I worked with a great group of people, Bob Nielsen, and the New York State Turfgrass Association, kind of paying it forward from the likes of Mike Maffei, in terms of being able to go after the harmful legislation in New York State. And that starts with our Turfgrass Advocacy Day that we do in Albany every year. We work through a Turfgrass Environmental Stewardship Fund, where we go to the state for money for turf research and education. You know, from that stemmed a want and a real desire to realize that it was more than the feel-good stories surrounding turf and golf courses that would make an impact. We had to go into the economics and the environmental impact. And that's how we tied it into Radius. We reached out, Bob Nielsen and myself reached out to the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and had some good discussions with them in terms of how best to go about telling our story from an economic and environmental impact. And that's how we came across Radius. We liked the West Coast feel and the overlap with Colorado, as well as Radius's branding and their marketing and, you know, the elements that Gina and her company put into that study. You know, we felt were far superior to what we had seen in states like Arizona, California. And so that's really how the, you know, initiative started from a grassroots campaign, and it went to the New York Golf Foundation and the New York Golf Association. So it was a ambitious endeavor, and it's something that's still not over, but we were happy. I mean, more than thrilled to have partnered with Radius. And, you know, we think Gina and her team did an excellent job producing this report.
That's great. And I would echo those, that very great study. And we'll get more into this kind of the specifics of that. But Gina, why don't you just give us a little bit of background on Radius Sports Group and who, in addition to New York State, some of the other clients that you have?
Yeah, so I founded my company 15 years ago, and our focus is really around sustainability and data-driven initiatives and looking at those within the sports industry, primarily golf. With that, it's important that we're getting, for things like the economic and environmental impact reports that we do, not just with New York, but we've worked with Texas, which faces drought issues in terms of water. We work with Colorado, as Tom mentioned, which also faces water quality and water conservation concerns. And then we're going to soon be releasing a report with Wisconsin and Vermont. In addition to that, we do sustainability reporting, corporate social responsibility reporting, case studies. And with all of those, the common thing is that we want to be accurate. We want to be data-driven. But we also want to share the information in a way that is meaningful and engaging so that all stakeholders can understand the impacts that are being made. Ultimately, you know, being a sustainability company, you know, we love to see improvement. So as we go, you know, 5 years down the road and do another study, say with Colorado or New York, we look for improvements and helping the states and the various associations within the states, within golf, establish those baselines and work to kind of continuously improve.
I think that one of the unique things that Gina brought to the business and brought to and brings to golf is that she really worked on sustainability outside of golf. And I think that there's something to be said for sustainability in larger industries, bringing that knowledge in from, I believe she came from the automotive industry, bringing that in from something like the automotive industry helps to kind of think outside the box.
That's great. And we want to dig into the findings and look at the numbers and the stories that, you know, that this report is helping you tell. Before we do that, Tom, lay the stage out here for us, though. What was the legislation or the series of legislation that got your attention and had you saying, whoa, it is time to do something here?
There have been a number of bills that always come to the surface. Some bills you might be aware of. Most of them you're not, because most of the bills that we deal with in New York State revolve around environmental bills in terms of water quality and protection, chemicals that are being applied as part of a holistic program. And, you know, listen, I have kids in New York State. Okay. I live in New York State. I've been a lifelong resident in New York State. To think that I want to do anything as a golf course superintendent and caretaker that would in any way harm the air and water quality in New York State would be something that would be of concern to me. We saw a number of bills that kept coming up, and these bills were concerning. I mean, there are bills out there that want to ban the use of pesticides on golf courses that would take away Bethpage State Park. The legislators that make these bills, they don't even realize what the impact of these bills would be until the bills are brought to their attention. So thankfully, they just stay within their committees. The ones that actually make it to the table are the ones that indirectly affect the amount of money that's generated in golf, the amount of money that we take home in our salaries, and the amount of money that the consumer pays to play. Coming from the upstate area, unlike down here, people will travel to play. And price point is a huge thing in the upstate markets. I think that's lost in the narrative down here, where we kind of are in like one of these golden age eras of golf on Long Island.
So let's dig into some of the findings.
Yeah,
so.
And I guess as we look at these findings, and Tom, you would be closest to this, but Gina, with your data, you may be able to give a kind of a perspective. How is New York State doing? How is the golf industry overall? How are we doing as an industry?
It's doing well. I mean, considering there's 833 golf courses, that number has been pretty unchanged since the last reporting period in 2007. But yet we've seen a growth in revenue. We've seen growth in number of golfers. We've seen growth in rounds played. I think New York is fourth in the nation for participation with on-course golfers. There's like 1.6 million golfers in the state. Rounds played, 8.2 million rounds, which is also up over prior years. So the fact that golf, it's not a bunch of new facilities that are being built. It's actually new golfers, and golf tourism has increased. That was a big finding that we found through doing the report. So it is doing well. And we could look at, you know, since the pandemic, you know, lifestyle shifts that have happened more toward outdoor recreation and golf being a big benefactor of that. We're continuing to see growth in the state, and that is incredibly positive for the industry.
I think Gina brought up a good point. Before the pandemic, I could just speak to the golf course that I was managing. We were, you know, around 17, 18,000 rounds. And, you know, we've gone to as high as 26,000 rounds and maintained anywhere between 23 and 24,000 rounds of golf. I think the pandemic was one of those examples where we had to come together for the first time as a state group, you know, really led by the golf associations to advocate for golf as a safe leisure activity, you know, in a time when everything was deemed unsafe. And I think that was a defining moment for us. It's good to see that the momentum of that has sustained itself. And so have the number of golf outings that have increased. And I think there's been a large population of younger kids that are now playing. I mean, my son is 14 years old and all he wants to do is go out on the golf course and play.
There's a program, Youth on Course, which is relatively new to nationwide, but New York is a big participator in that. And it's facilitated through the State Golf Associations, the Met Golf Association and the New York State Golf Association, where kids can play rounds of golf for $5. that helps at a young age, getting kids going. And, you know, if the families come out, then you've got more play happening with beginners as adults as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, not only that too, but I just wanted to say too, that I think that there's a, you know, that there's a need and a want, you know, to get some of the populations that live in more urban areas, to get them out into green space areas, even if it's for just field trips. We saw that at the launch of the study, you know, and speaking to a couple legislators in the five boroughs, we would love to pursue avenues in which we could do that. You know, it could come from Rochester, it can come from Buffalo, it can come from Syracuse, it can come from, you know, New York, because we can expose them not only to the game of golf, but also to careers in golf. And I think that's important.
Right, right. We've had some of the regional leadership from First Tee on the program a few months back, and we're really impressed by what they were doing to, you know, bring more people and more different people, more different backgrounds. And to your point, Tom, more of the folks who may not necessarily live near a golf course onto the course. So hopefully programs like First Tee as well are helping bring new players into the game.
Yeah, the First Tee program is a great program. I think that you can expand on the First Tee program, and you can make it really an all-encompassing program, because, you know, what people forget and what you have to remind people of is that a golf course is a living, breathing entity. And so the game that you're playing, on, you know, is something that has to be managed from a scientific standpoint. It can really expand to something where they can understand the scientific component of it. They can understand the sports component of it. They can even understand the hospitality component of it. And that's really what I think would be the ultimate goal of bringing so many associations together.
Tom, I want to circle back to that point too about the associations. So you said you all came together to advocate for opening it up during COVID. If I got you right, everybody's kind of more or less stuck together. Everybody's still getting along and working together.
Yeah, that's been one of the great benefits of this study, is that, you know, we are now into another phase, you know, where it's kind of, you have a great study and you put it together and you have a booklet and you have a website. Now you have to actually go out and market it and get in front of the right people. Who those people are, I think it's everybody, you know, the legislators, the consumers, the Department of Environmental Conservation, the policymakers. This is a first of its kind study for New York State. We had a study from 2007, I believe. And so we're going off numbers based off 2007. So of course you're going to see an increase in dollars. Then you want to measure that against things like tourism, some of your larger revenue drivers. And I think we stack up pretty well. So, you know, it's important to now market that study in a unified front. And I think that's where, you know, we're at, is that point of let's brand it and let's market it and let's go tell our story to the people that matter.
But Tom's point about the first of its kind, the 2007 report did not have the environmental aspects to it. So to really report out and dig into the data on environmental has been tremendous, and really getting all of the golf course superintendents associations in the state more involved than in the past when it was just an economic study. So in total, there are 16 different allied associations as part of the Empire State Golf Alliance that came together for this.
Let's start marketing these findings. We did highlight some of the data early on, and Gene, I'll lead with you, kind of the economic impact, you know, kind of the dollars and cents of what golf brings to the state of New York.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. So we've got two numbers that we look at for that. We've got the direct impact, which is what is spent directly by the industry that goes into the economy, and that's $6.9 billion. So almost $7 billion directly driving the economy from golf. And then you look at the other figure, which is $12.9 billion in total impact or total output. And what that includes is the direct, which we just mentioned, the $6.9 billion, but also indirect and induced. And what that is when you have suppliers that supply to the industry, what they are spending in the economy, and then what employees out there are spending in the economy. So it's really that multiplier effect. So those are really huge numbers. And one of the stats that we talk about, which is just an interesting way to think about it, is when you look at that total impact of $12.9 billion, that number is bigger than New York horse racing, craft beverages, and Yankees home games combined. So if you add all those together, they're still not as big as that $12.9 billion in New York golf impact.
You know, in terms of the marketing of this, and I'm going to focus in on policymakers here. So elected officials, the people who work for them, possibly other lobbying groups that are influencing that at policymaking. Break it down this way. There's been legislation out there that would hurt golf courses. That would, you know, I think you'd said like Beth
it
Page
already is hurt.
It is hurt. Okay.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. This is where I'm headed. So you can take it from here. What do you most hope for from governments? You need them to kind of, you know, lay off and let you do your thing? Or are there actually policies they could make that would help you build on, and you've got impressive numbers here, help you build on those?
That's a great question. I think what we need is a seat at the table, an independent seat at the table. You know, right now, it's a tremendous injustice to be tied into, and no offense to the homeowner, but to be tied into the homeowner that's walking into Home Depot and buying a bag of fertilizer and going and putting it out on their lawn. Agriculture does a great job, and rightfully so, because they feed the population and the masses. You know, they have their own carve-outs, as they should. I'm certainly not saying that we are agriculture, but we are a large, you know, commodity for New York State. And we do provide, I mean, think about all the competitions we provide, the fundraisers we provide. I would love to see a stat of the number of fundraisers that are hosted on golf courses for legislators. You can't find that anywhere. You know, there's this big push for this New York Community Climate Protection Act, which is a great act, okay? It's all about clean water, clean air, fully on board. There's some initiatives in there that just aren't realistic right now. And this gets to a larger, you know, larger point away from golf, but the thing is, when you go and you delve into those pages, what don't you see? You don't see any pictures of the beautiful golf courses in New York State or turf grass or anything along those lines. You know, we are parts of communities. I mean, in New York City, one of the mayoral candidates was trying to take away some of the golf courses, and that created an upheaval. It was in the New York Post. People underestimate the value of the green space in their communities until that green space is taken away. And golf courses are a vital part of the communities in and around New York State.
I was just going to say there's a host of benefits with the green space that golf courses provide, and that Tom was just getting at. And when you're talking about Long Island or New York City, with all the concrete and the buildings and the structures, it amplifies the heat island effect. So it makes it feel warmer than in outlying areas. And the green space helps cool the cities, and the green space helps people get in contact and be in touch with nature, provides wildlife habitat, helps reduce the energy use because it's cooling the cities. And there's more. I mean, it helps with water filtration. You know, when you have just roads and highways, you know, and the water just drains off, you don't have that filtration aspect that you get from the turf grass. So there's so many benefits to it. So I think, you know, when Tom is mentioning golf having a seat at the table, it's really having a two-way dialogue around, you know, what are these benefits that golf is providing that is above and beyond what may be just perceived by some as that traditional, historic, elitist sport. And we just talked about all the growth with children and diversity and adaptive golf. And there's just like so much accessibility in the state of New York with all of the public golf courses that there are. It's not elitist, but some still perceive that. Beyond that, it's also providing these great ecosystem services.
But just to follow up on one point, I did want to say that I think that the benefit that it has from a mental health standpoint too for kids is very important, and that gets lost. So now I think that, you know, having kids, I think one of the best things that you could do was to go outside when you were a kid. And that's a place where, you know, I've had field trips at my golf course, and I have, you know, the teachers that write back and say that was one of the best field trips of the year. And I think that that's tremendous. And like Gina said, that's all we're asking for is really a seat at the table. We have done a tremendous amount of work with our best management practices to demonstrate how we work environmentally to be stewards of the environment on the golf course. And we have to hold ourselves accountable and do those things that we preach. But we also, too, have to have an acknowledgement from the politicians that we are doing those things, and we do want to work with them, not against them.
Not to make light of it, there's lightness in playing golf, as long as you're doing well, but not lateness on the topic. But I got to tell you, I'm sitting here thinking every politician I know, and I know a bunch, golf, or to your point, end up at golf courses for fundraisers. So I'll be honest, it's a little surprising that you haven't had a seat at the table long before this, because you're offering a service that the vast majority of people in politics partake in some form, right?
Or their constituents do.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Right. For sure.
Right, and they want to. And what happens is, basically how it hurts the industry and how it hurts the golfer is a lot of this legislation creates things where we still can get the job done, but it's much more expensive. And it becomes more expensive because these bills get passed without real science behind them. And that gets carried down to the consumer. So if a $40 golf course becomes a $60 golf course, that's going to make it a little more hesitant for somebody to come out to play. And that is the economic toll that it starts to take on the consumer that gets lost in the bill about some sort of product that controls something that eats at the turf. And when we get right to the table and right to a carve out, there's nobody advocating specifically for golf.
When you're at those tables, I'm sure there's going to be someone who asks some version of this question. Yeah, there's legislation. I imagine there could be or there will be that might govern or dictate what I can or can't buy at a Home Depot to put on my lawn because I could go buy chemicals and put them on my lawn that aren't so good for the environment. So let me just translate that over to a golf course. So you've got an entity that's, you know, hundreds or thousands of times bigger than my lawn. Why shouldn't you follow the same rules? So if somebody says something like that to you, I know, Tom, you've got a response that's based in science and thoughtfulness. Talk us through what the reality is.
Well, the reality is that we have much more advanced technology, and we have practices that we put in place that mitigate the effects on, you know, the outside. We have to go through certification processes. You know, we have to get commercial applicators license, you know, and then we follow specific protocols for how things are produced. We have buffer zones around waterways. We are very careful in how we apply. Remember, we're managing big budgets, and there's a cost associated with this. We're not managing for aesthetics as much as we're managing for performance. I would certainly wouldn't put on my home lawn. I would not manage my home lawn as intensely as I manage my golf course. But that doesn't mean that I'm managing the home lawn just with chemicals and the golf course just with chemicals. I'm managing it a number of different ways. I manage it with sand. I manage it with fertilizer. I manage it with, there's agronomic practices that get taken into place that, you know, if I did it on my home lawn, my neighbors will look at me like I'm nuts.
So essentially within the, I mean, well, let me put it, I'm going to back it up and put it a totally different way. You went to an Ivy League school to learn how to do this, right? Yes. I mean, the science we're talking about is probably lost, understandably, on a lot of people, including, by the way, myself. People look at a golf course that looks nice, it's fun to go play on. Is it fair to say, you know, I mean, the appreciation for what it takes to get a course to that point and keep it there with all the varying factors you've got to deal with is an incredibly complex process. That's what you're saying?
It is a complex process. I mean, it's as simple as soil testing and putting fertilizer down, but it's as complex as managing to maintain an ecosystem that's healthy and safe for the environment. And that's where the complexity comes in. And I think we follow kind of in the shadows of agriculture. What goes on in agriculture has a trickle-down effect to golf. So that's a good thing because in ag, they are, of course, managing for the population, but also managing for a price point. And so when that comes down to our market, you know, we're getting great technology, we're using great technology, and we can be pretty sophisticated in how we manage, which does come down to science, data, and analytics.
Got it. No, thank you. I appreciate you walking us through that. Gina, I want to throw a quick follow-up to you. So it's not going to be a surprise to any of our listeners or viewers in New York that New York State is highly regulated. You've got a good national view on this. So the challenges that Tom and his colleagues are facing in New York, is this pretty consistent across the country? Does it vary greatly from state to state? What's the national outlook on this?
We're seeing it grow. Typically on the West Coast, you see it in California generally first, and then it moves across. We see the types of pressures legislatively, like Colorado is one that we've been working with for a number of years. On the best management practices side that Tom was mentioning around all the things that superintendents look at for managing a golf course, and we're talking like, you know, it could be 12 to 15 different segments of management, from cultural practices to integrated pest management to nutrient management, water quality and conservation. When superintendents are managing using best management practices, we found that in a state like, say, Colorado, to be able to show the documented best management practices that facilities are using helps with those conversations with legislators, because in a state like Colorado, there's been legislation on the table that has timed out, but we'll be back around pesticide use being determined on a county or citywide basis rather than through the EPA, just the EPA on a federal basis or even state laws. So using the best management practices and being able to document those is really crucial. And yes, so we've seen that kind of growth of additional legislation nationwide. There's also been stuff around energy and electric equipment as well in other states. And that is seems to be growing as well. It seems to be kind of a, when it starts in California, it kind of starts to move across. And so, yeah, we continue to see that happening.
Well, I have to believe, though, you know, the narrative, I mean, I am seeing younger and a more diverse demographics on the golf courses that I attend or I, you know, where I play rounds. I do think, though, the narrative around sustainability really needs to be changed, because there is that perception, and maybe that perception, Gina, is when you're flying over Scottsdale or you're flying over Las Vegas, where you see these deserts with, you know, the green links, right? And the perception is that, oh, they're using the water, there's droughts, et cetera, et cetera. But I've got to believe, and maybe this is a question for both you and Tom, I mean, New York State, we're in a much better place with the fresh water we have and the terrain that we have. Is that a safe assumption?
I believe that we are. And I believe that what the policymakers are doing is correct. You know, they're trying to protect our water, and rightfully so. The way that they go about protecting our water sometimes is a little baffling. You know, I think you've seen it in the upstate area with some of the shoreline erosion that's taken place. You know, when they started to release water from the St. Lawrence waterways down into the lakes. And I think that the way that they do it down here on Long Island is that, you know, we deal with well water. The biggest concern with the well water is obviously saltwater intrusion. As you pump down your water underneath the ground, you create areas for saltwater to come in. They regulate us very tightly. Here's the problem. There's no regulation for the homeowner, and they're your biggest consumers. So I walk outside, like this morning, I walked outside, it was 32 degrees, and I saw three people with their home lawn sprinklers on. We haven't run sprinklers on the golf course since October 15th,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
we're managing through the golf much tighter, the grass.
Yeah, absolutely. With water, John, to your question, there's water conservation and there's water quality. And water quality is kind of the bigger concern in the state of New York versus, say, in Arizona or Nevada or Texas is more water conservation. We work with Wisconsin as well. Water quality also really critical around, we were talking about Ohio earlier around the Great Lakes and everything. So water quality is really crucial, that the BMPs, like Tom mentioned, around buffer areas and applications of pesticides or nutrients, like that is controlled, measured, that practices are being used other than chemical practices whenever possible. When we also talk about water conservation, there are a lot of things that superintendents are doing on that front as well to ensure that, like, the systems that are in place for prescriptive irrigation, you know, that are really time managed and managed very well versus a homeowner, like Tom had mentioned earlier too.
Right. And that's where the science of our expertise comes into play. I mean, we are using things such as soil moisture meters that can actually quantify the moisture in the soil. And no longer is it just a feel, it's actually a number that you get, you know, that dictates what you can do and how much water you need. That's a large component. I want to use this drone imagery. You put the drone imagery up and it gives you a heat map of the golf course, and it really helps you dial in the stressors on the turf. And these are the things that we just need to do a better job of demonstrating this within the state. And that's our job, and that's the club's job to do that. And that's really where telling your story from a golf course specific entity comes from. And that's what we really need to do. Every superintendent, every club, you know, should look into these things, because we're only as good as we are individually to come together as a whole.
Within the industry, Tom and Gina, you could both speak to this. Is it more contingent on owners of certain types of clubs to do that? I'm just thinking out loud here, but if you're the superintendent of a public course that's funded by taxpayer dollars, ultimately you're reporting into elected officials. I could see, I don't know, where that person might need to think a little differently about how she or he speaks publicly or who they're talking to about this as compared to a, you know, somebody who's running a private club. So is there a differentiation in the industry on that?
No, that's a great question. I think that it's our job to work within the confines of the parameters which in we work to do the best we can. If we can speak publicly and we can come out and advocate publicly, then we should, you know, but it doesn't mean that we can't demonstrate those practices without having to say anything. And it doesn't mean that we can't believe in the things that we do to benefit the environment, but also to benefit the dues paying members or the consumers. So I think that there's a balance. It's a question now of, you know, demonstrating that balance and working towards more incorporation of some of these ideas.
Tom just spoke recently at the New York, the Met public operators meeting. I don't know if Tom, you want to maybe share any insights from that meeting?
Sure. There's the, you know, I've always been amazed at how the, you know, the golf courses upstate, not even so much, I'm not trying to minimize them, but you know, I would say they're mom and pops, but there's a lot of golf courses where the owner is the chef and the owner's family may be involved in the management of the golf course. And they take a tremendous amount of pride in this. And I think that, you know, if I could have a dream job, I would probably do something like this, because I think that it really is something special to have, you know, a 85, 90 acre piece of property that people want to come out and play. You know, there is something that's really special about that and important about that, that gets lost in, you know, the glitz and glamour of the courses, you know, the bigger name courses, the Oak Hills, the Wingfoots, the Shinnecocks.
That's great. Well, hey, as we wrap this up, I just want to kind of talk about really quickly the future, and, you know, would love both your insights on how we continue to grow the game and how we as a state also can drive more economic return back to our community. So, you know, Gina, I'll start with you. What can we all be doing to help grow the game?
One thing that we didn't talk about was the number of championship events that are hosted in New York State. And I think continuing to be on the forefront of that is critical. And New York is scheduled to be. There are some great announcements that came out around the Ryder Cup, around future PGA championships. And New York has hosted more U.S. Opens and PGA championships than any other state. So wow, that's pretty tremendous. And I think, you know, continuing to be on the forefront with things like that helps to grow the game, because it demonstrates that New York is behind the sport of golf and gets people excited about it when activities like that are happening in the state, and continues to support jobs too. And the more that you get people working in the industry, the more you're going to get people wanting to golf in the industry. There is a lot of effort around supporting local suppliers too. And I'm giving kind of the non-traditional answers,
right,
but supporting local suppliers, there's a lot of effort around that through the championship events, but also just through golf courses sourcing locally from, you know, whether it be from wineries or orchards, but or fishermen or farmers. But sourcing also, when you do that and you get people involved in supplying to your golf course or for a championship event, you increase interest in the sport, and that also helps to potentially grow the game with new interest in new beginner golfers.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that Gina brings out. And I think that's really why it started with just, you know, looking at her website and looking at the content that Radius had and the parallels that Colorado had to us. But I think what's come of this study that's really been enlightening to me is twofold. This was one of the greatest benefits of this study. And I think this is what Gina brought in from a national standpoint that ties in so well from a sustainability model, is bringing all these different entities together within the game of golf, uniting them. My goal and the goal of the people that involved on the superintendent standpoint was to protect what we can use on a golf course. Because if we protect what we can use on a golf course, it's going to help us do our job better, which is going to keep the money that we're using more efficiently used, which is going to keep the price down for the golfers. If our associations came together to actually have some of these demonstrations of what golf courses can actually do for people in terms of employment, in terms of green space, in terms of the environmental benefits, I think that's probably the greatest takeaway, you know, that all-encompassing benefit that a golf course can have, whether it be, like you say, whether it be the public golf course or maybe they might not be able to go out and advocate, but they certainly can. You know, Bethpage, for example, right? I don't know if they can advocate at Bethpage, but he does a great job bringing schools in and managing these grounds, you know, and doing these fields with native flowers and native plants and beehives and all these things that, you know, can take place on a golf course. You have 95 to 100 acres of this open green space. Bring those elements in.
Yeah, that's great. Gina and Tom, I want to thank you for enlightening us, as well as I know our listeners, on, you know, the importance of golf. And it's so relevant, Tim, because, you know, whether you're a golfer or not, it kind of ties into the whole skin in the game concept, because, you know, there's a return back to you, whether it's jobs, whether it's tax revenue, whether it's obviously the green space. So thanks for bringing everybody up to speed on that really important study.
Yeah, it's part of every community, and we appreciate you helping people see it a lot deeper. I mean, this conversation was really enlightening, and just in terms of the challenges you're facing and also what you're bringing to those challenges and to those discussions. So I do hope you find yourself having a seat at those tables from this point on.
Thank you for hosting this great, meaningful conversation.
Happy to do it.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks again. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Listen to BTPM NPR wherever you are on the BTPM Listen app. Find it in the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Hey, welcome back to Skin in the Game. And I really want to thank Gina Rizzi and Tom Kaplan for joining us. Tim, I was really interested in economics of what golf brings to drive tourism and what golf brings to drive jobs, because that's a big part of what we talk about. But honestly, I didn't think we would go as deep, and I'm glad we did, on really what this means from a legislative standpoint.
That took this discussion in for me too, an unexpected
direction. No, and I think a very meaningful way, because, you know, some cases, I don't want to say we take for granted golf courses and the green space they provide, but, you know, something we kind of do. You know, there's other industries that inflation is hitting them and regulation is hitting them, and you don't think about golf and recreation in general to be those industries that are affected by inflation and cost of goods, but they are. And I think Tom's point on, you know, hey, if we're overregulated, it's not only going to hurt the golf course, but it's going to hurt the golfer, because those prices or those regulations are going to be actually passed on to the end user.
Right. It's a deeper discussion that requires more voices than, you know, we can have on one episode of this show or any show, right? If people who own a house with a regular size lawn have to follow some kind of regulations, you know, theoretically about what chemicals they do or don't use on their lawn, why shouldn't you, as a golf course that has a lawn so much bigger? And, you know, it's simple question, complicated answer. How do you guide people through that? You know, we can ask questions in simple ways, but don't think the answers are simple. You know, a bill that might provide an overarching legislation that impacts the entire golf industry may need a much deeper, more nuanced look. And that's part of getting that seat at the table.
Right.
Sitting with us and talking to the public is one thing. Sitting with legislators at least opens up that discussion, of sports, we don't typically think about.
Yeah, I mean, Albany has done a lot of good things for the craft beverage industry in New York State, the wine industry in New York State. Albany funds a stadium for professional teams, you know, and I think we need to look at the recreational venues, in this case, golf courses, the same way. They are driving tourism. They're creating jobs. I do believe they need a seat at the table, because, you know, it's a really great differentiator that we have in this region. And I'll also speak to Southern Ontario, because they have phenomenal golf courses in Toronto area and obviously in the, you know, Niagara Peninsula. And I just think we can't take those for granted, because if you look at other states, and we talked a little bit about Nevada, we talked about Arizona, California, you know, they don't have this natural asset of green space and water and beautiful terrain that we have in New York State. 70% of the 833 courses are public courses.
Yeah, so when you're driving by, whether you're a golfer or not, when you drive by a golf course, you know, three out of every four, roughly, are subsidized or supported by taxpayer dollars, right? These are not all private businesses that are existing to make money. You know, these are designed to get people into the game and give people access to the game.
Right. So again, Gina and Tom, thank you for joining us here in Skin in the Game. And then Tim, I do need to correct you though on my passion for golf. My passion is for a great 5 mile walk in green space in the outdoors.
I'm with you on that.
And then unfortunately, I have to bring a set of clubs with me and it ruins the rest of the day. But it's the green space, it's the activity, and New York State Golf Association doing a great job. And, you know, I just want to close with the fact that, you know, and they're working to change those perceptions of it being an elitist sport and being, you know, only private clubs. And again, things like what they're doing and working with First Tee and what we're, you know, doing even in this region with groups like Project Play, exposing the sport to more people from more backgrounds is going to be good for the game and just good for people in general.
Before we head out of here, John, I want to highlight a point that Tom made too. I mean, what it can do for people's mental health and sense of well-being. And he was speaking about kids and his reference point. But I think for people, like in pulling people together, it is one of the few things still out there, sports in general, but golf in particular, that can pull people together. Right. You know, no matter where you're coming from
or what you're thinking. Get you off your phone for 3-4 hours, right?
Not enough can be said about how important that is.
And it's, in all seriousness, especially for the kids, because, yeah, you know, we talk about the sport of baseball and it's, you know, it's much mental because you're out there, you know, kind of by yourself in center field and you've got to, you know, really it's a mental game as much as physical. And golf's the same way. I mean, you have to keep your composure and, you know, you're off technology for a few hours. That's some real benefits of a sport like golf.
Yeah, I mean, the life skills, the business skills you develop through golf. Right. You and I hosted a great episode back in June, July, where we had, you know, a handful of golf industry professionals, yep, on there, and we got deep into that. So not that everything has to be educational or personal development. Being pure fun is totally fine. But since the golf industry is asking, first of all, generating a ton of money, but also asking for a lot of support, you know, it's fair to say, okay, what more are you offering? And they're offering a lot.
Right, right. Great conversation. And I want to thank our guests for joining us today. And want to thank you for listening and tuning into Skin in the Game. Until next week, thank you very much. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.